was gone. All that remained were thick spires of smoke twisting upward. No, no, no! Tella didn't know if she shouted the words, if she gasped them, or if she just thought them. She knew there was only one reason Legend's magic would suddenly stop. He was dead. No! This time, she definitely shouted the word. Then her legs gave out, and she fell to her knees. The Middle. Chapter 25. Donatella. Tella could feel the black earth beneath her hands and knees, but she didn't know if it was dry or damp or prickly with grass and twigs, and she didn't know how long she'd stayed there, unable to move. All she knew was that she needed to get up. She needed to keep moving. She needed to keep running, as Legend had begged her to do with his last words. A dry sob shook her chest as she tried to rise. Legend wasn't dead forever. This wasn't like what had happened to her mother, who Tella would never see again. He would come back to life, but for now, he was gone. She looked back at the wreckage that minutes ago had been the maze, but he didn't emerge from the smoke. Bedlam reigned where hours ago there had been magic and butterflies. She could hear the sound of people escaping, clumsy footsteps and heavy breathing from those not used to running. Tella struggled to her feet. She knew she needed to run away. Legend had asked her to flee with his last words. But what would happen to his body if she left? What if the fates had figured out that he was Legend? What if they took his body so that when he came back to life, they could kill him over and over? Tella ran back toward the melee. Leave the city, she warned anyone she saw. Get out of here! She didn't know if there were more than two fates nearby, but if they'd come to kill Ellentine's heir, they weren't afraid of discovery. And they'd likely take over the palace next. Unlike the grounds outside, it was still bright and glowing, untouched by violence. For now. When the fates took over the palace and then the empire, the fountains would probably be filled with blood. A rigid hand latched onto Tella's shoulder. What are you doing? She tensed, bracing for a fight, even as she recognized the voice. Low and resonant, with a lilting accent that was just the tiniest bit shaky. Julian. It was difficult to see his face in the dark, but the alarming way his fingers dug into her shoulder gave away enough. He already knew what had happened. We need to go back into the maze to get his body, she said. Tella, Julian squeezed her shoulder. My brother is dead. But he'll come back to life, right? She tried to shake off Julian's hand, or maybe she was just shaking. He's immortal. He'll come back. Why don't you sound more certain about that? Because I'm trying to save your life right now. He made me swear that if anything like this happened to him, I would get you to safety. Julian released Tella's shoulder, grabbed her arm, and pulled her in the opposite direction of the palace. Wait, wait, Tella panted. What about Scarlet? She's not here. Julian tugged harder on Tella's hand, forcing her through clouds of smoke. When she didn't show up to meet me at the maze, I went to find her, but she's not at the palace. Where is she? With the Count. But, Tella sputtered. Scarlet told me she was calling the game off. I wish she had, Julian grunted, his words choppy as he urged her to sprint faster. When I went in her rooms, I found a note from the Count asking to see her again today. Where does he live? Tella asked. On the outskirts of the city, past the ruins south of the temple district. Then that's where we go, she said. There was a pause, full of nothing but heavy breathing, where Julian might have argued that he was supposed to get Tella to safety, and then he would look for Scarlet on his own. But it seemed his love for her sister outweighed the promise he'd made to Legend. Or Julian knew there was no point in fighting with Tella. This was why Tella had always liked Julian. He never gave up on Scarlet. They fled swiftly across the darkened city together, but they didn't move faster than the rumors. Prince Dante is dead, crushed to death by his maze.
The former heir came back and murdered Prince Dante.
Prince Dante was killed by someone in the maze. Invaders have taken over the city and beheaded Prince Dante. Some of the claims were closer to the truth than others, but all of them had one thing in common. Legend was dead. Her steps faltered, but she didn't stop. If anything, she ran harder. The fates had won another round. But once Tella found her sister and Legend came back to life, they'd all visit the vanished market. There they'd find a way to destroy the fallen star, and then they'd be able to stop the other fates as well. There were holes in her slippers by the time she and Julian passed the edge of the city at dawn. It was a brilliantly bloody sunrise, as if someone had sliced open the clouds and hazy streams of red had poured out instead of rain. On another morning, it might have looked wrong, but on this particular day, it felt appropriate that even the sky appeared violent. A dusty stretch of dry, yellowing grassland rested between the city and the Count's estate. The sad bark of a dog was the only sound, save for the tired trudge of Tella's and Julian's footsteps. Tella tried to catch her breath now that their pace had slowed. She inhaled deeply, but the air tasted unclean, like the foulest parts of the city rather than a fresh slice of country. The stench grew stronger, and the sad howling of the dog grew louder as they approached the Count's estate. Tella hugged her arms to her chest, and Julian walked closer to her side. The Count's residence looked like the beginning of a fairy tale, before the magic had arrived. The gardens were full of curious, well-tended flowers that appeared to have been planted with care. But the house itself was covered in chipping paint, the windows clean but full of cracks, and the crumbling chimneys appeared to be in severe need of repair. Even the long path they followed to the house was covered in fractures. "I thought the Count's residence was fancier," Tella said. "Scarlet described it as being much nicer."
"I don't think she saw it for what it really was the other day. I think she was too concerned about meeting the Count, and it didn't smell this bad."
Julian put a hand over his nose and mouth. Tella did the same, fresh nerves clawing at her stomach. The stench was so putrid she dry-heaved as they reached the front door. It was cracked open, oozing more of the wretched odor. The dog barked again, long and keening. Tella halted as the door creaked all the way open, and an awful, incessant buzzing joined the unseen dog's anguished cries. She didn't remember entering, but she would regret stepping inside for the rest of her life. No servants greeted them or warned them away. There was only the endless howling of the dog, the buzzing of the flies, and Tella's silent prayers. "Do not let my sister be dead. Do not let my sister be dead." Because someone was certainly dead. The morbid stench grew worse as she and Julian finally passed the entry and reached the open library. Tella swayed on her feet as she saw the Count's body. Or she thought it was the Count's body. He was in the second floor library, sitting in a great chair behind his desk, and he looked as if the skin had been burnt off his body. The dog beside him howled again and shook its sad face, trying to ward off the maggots and flies from feasting on the Count's remains. Tella tried to look away from the charred corpse. She'd seen enough death that week. She didn't need to look it in the eyes again. She'd never seen a body flayed with fire, and she wished she wasn't seeing it now. But she couldn't turn away from the macabre scene before her. It shouldn't have been possible. If the Count had been burned alive, then other parts of his library should have caught fire. But it was as if someone had instructed the flames to only burn his skin. Tella staggered back a step as something Jax had said returned to her.
"At least he stabbed her instead of burning her to death with his powers. Fire's the most painful way to die."
"I think I know who did this," Tella said. "I think the fallen star was here to find Scarlet." Julian turned entirely gray. Why would he want crimson? Because of our mother. Before he killed her, the fallen star said that she'd force him back inside the cursed deck of destiny. He must have been free once before, and our mother imprisoned him again. It probably wasn't enough for him just to kill her. Now he's coming after her daughters.
Which would also explain why their apartment had been ransacked.
Tella hoped she was wrong. She couldn't lose her sister the same way she'd lost her mother. But she couldn't imagine who else had done this, or why anyone else would do this. She'd never liked Nicholas, but the fact that he'd clearly been tortured to death made her think that he hadn't given up her sister, or at least not easily. Scarlet might have managed to get away. All the servants seemed to have escaped, so maybe they'd taken her sister with them. Or maybe she'd managed to hide and they just needed to find her. Julian tried to pull the dog from the room as they went to hunt for Scarlet, but the animal wouldn't leave. It continued to howl and guard its dead master as Tella and Julian scoured every tainted inch of the estate for Scarlet.
Crimson! Julian shouted,
and Tella would have sworn his eyes were glassy. He wasn't crying, but he was close.
Crimson!
Scarlet! Tella called at the same time, repeating the name until her throat went raw. Her vision dulled around the edges as she combed through closets and cellars and dusty rooms full of cloth-covered furniture. By the time she and Julian completed searching, Tella's legs were shaking. She was covered in damp, and she'd found no signs that Scarlet had even been there. Julian was a sweaty mess as well. Hair clung to his forehead and his shirt stuck to his chest as they stumbled away from the house and into the empty stables. It was the sole place on the estate that did not reek of dying. But Tella didn't want to rest there. She didn't want to curl up in the hay and eat the food Julian had stolen from the kitchen. She didn't want to rehash any horrors or sit in silence while her worst fears came true. She'd already lost her mother and legend. She couldn't lose her sister. Her chest went tight, and for a desperate moment, Tella wished Jax was there to take away the pain. Chapter 26 Scarlet. Scarlet waited for the world to rock, for the boat to sway and her stomach to roll. But only her stomach met her expectations. It bubbled with queasy unease as she sat up in a feather-soft bed and opened her eyes to find that everything was cream and gold columns and carpets and bedding with delicate hints of pink. Nothing was purple, her father's signature color. She didn't smell his wretched perfume or see his hateful face. Yet Scarlet felt far from safe as she slid out of a bed shaped like a crescent moon and covered in gossamer-thin pink sheets. On clumsy legs, still unsteady from whatever she'd been drugged with, Scarlet made her way between columns, all toppled with disembodied heads of baby cherubs with animal eyes. Lovely and wrong. But they were not quite as disturbing as the frescoes of humans with animal parts painted on the ceiling. Someone had a very twisted sense of decoration. Her stomach churned as she reached the floor-to-ceiling windows and swiftly pulled back the curtains. More endless arches and arcades of gold and white. Scarlet wasn't certain where she was, but she wasn't on a boat at the docks or on the ocean. It looked as if she'd traveled back in time to before Valenda's ruins had been ruins. Scarlet turned and ran, her feet bounding over fluffy cream carpets to search for a door. The reverie key still rested in her pocket. All she needed to find was a lock. But the only thing she found was a veil of pink curtains, barely thicker than the gauzy sheets on her bed. Scarlet tore them apart and barreled into a sitting room full of more frescoes. But it was the gilded cage that gave her pause. It took up almost half the room. On the other side of the cage was a door, but inside the cage was a young woman in a lavender gown sitting on a swing like a pet bird. Scarlet could have darted past her. The captive woman's head was gently bowed and her eyes were closed, as if she'd just rocked herself to sleep. If Scarlet were quiet, she wouldn't even wake her. But she couldn't escape and leave another girl captive. Scarlet took a cautious step closer. There were no ill colors swirling around the captive young woman, but Scarlet felt a wave of uncertainty as she approached. There was something very familiar about all of this, but her head was still too muddled from the drugs to untangle what it could be. The gleaming lock on the cage's golden door was larger than Scarlet's fist. She reached toward her pocket, wondering if it would open with the reverie key, but her dress closed the pocket before her fingers could reach in. At the same exact moment, the captive woman's head shot up, revealing alert lavender eyes the same color as her dress.
"Aren't you precious?"
Her voice was scratchy, as if she'd not spoken for a long time.
"Sadly, you cannot free me, little human. Only his true death will allow me to leave this cage."
"But I can never truly die," said a new voice.
Scarlet spun to her side. For a moment she thought she was looking at an angel. The broad man before her was dressed in the purest white and surrounded by sparks that made her think the air around him was a breath away from catching fire. Scarlet swore the gilded cage beside her looked duller now that he stood near it. His olive skin glowed, and his thick brown hair had strands of gold that matched his brilliant eyes. He was clearly not human.
"Hello, Scarlet."
The man before her curved his mouth slowly. It might have been a convincing smile except for his golden eyes, which twinkled and crinkled at the corners a second too late, as if he needed to remind himself that a smile was supposed to touch his entire face.
"You look exactly like your mother.
But she would never have paused to free Anissa if she thought she could have escaped. Paradise was ruthless."
He said the word ruthless the way someone else might have said the word beautiful. His smile even reached his eyes this time, making them glitter like stolen stars. They shined brighter than the sparks around him, which warmed the room like genuine flames. Instantly, Scarlet knew who the immortal before her was. The fallen star. The fate who'd murdered her mother in front of Tella. Scarlet faltered backward, shoulders slamming into the cage. She didn't know what the fallen star wanted with her, but she didn't want to find out. She tried to dart past him toward the door.
"That would be a mistake."
His hand fell on Scarlet's shoulder, heavy and strong enough to crush her entire arm with one squeeze.
"Gavriel, be a little gentle or you'll break her," said the woman in the cage.
The fallen star relaxed his hand but didn't let go.
"I don't wish to hurt you. I've brought you to the menagerie for your protection."
The only thing Scarlet needed protection from was him. But saying that was probably a terrible idea. She tried to focus on what he'd just told her. When she got out of there, because she was going to get out, she wanted to be able to tell the others exactly where she'd been.
"Isn't the menagerie one of the fated places?"
She hadn't studied the fated places as much as the fated immortals, but she recalled the menagerie was some sort of zoo full of magical chimeras and humans with animal parts, which explained all the disturbing frescoes and the woman in the cage beside her. Scarlet wondered if captivity was what he had planned for her as well. Her swirling thoughts couldn't recall much about the fallen star, other than that he'd made all the fates, and he'd killed her mother. Maybe he also collected women like pets, and Scarlet was his next acquisition.
"I think you're still scaring her,"
chimed the young woman in the cage.
"You don't need to fear me, Autara."
His grip on her shoulder relaxed a little more as he used that foreign word again. Scarlet was familiar with languages, but it was like nothing she'd ever heard.
"Why do you keep calling me that?" His teeth flashed with another attempt at a smile that was everything it wasn't supposed to be. It's my native tongue for daughter. The ornate room spun around Scarlet. She didn't know if he was trying to frighten or surprise her. She wanted to hope it was a twisted joke, but she doubted this immortal was capable of kidding. He was the monster that other monsters measured themselves against. If what he said was true, Scarlet wasn't entirely sure what that made her, but she didn't even want to know. She didn't want to believe him. He had to be deluded. He had to be wrong. This had to be a mistake. She already had one murderous, power-hungry father. She didn't deserve another one. This couldn't be true, even if deep, deep down a part of Scarlet reminded her how people often commented that Tella looked just like her father, but Scarlet held no resemblance to him. Her mother had also married her father after a whirlwind romance, which Scarlet had heard servants whispering about a few years back. They said it was only a quick marriage because Paloma had been pregnant, and some of the maids had sworn it wasn't with Marcello Dragna's child.
This would have worked better if you hadn't kidnapped her first, chided the young woman in the cage. Poor girl is in shock.
Quiet, Anissa, or tomorrow you'll wake up in a smaller cage. The fallen star turned his attention back to Scarlet. I can see you're having a hard time believing this, but you must have had some inclination that you're not entirely human. Is there anything you can do that most humans are incapable of?
But I am human, Scarlet protested, even as she saw fearful shades of brilliant purple swirling all around her. It was a gift she knew wasn't normal, just like her more recent ability to see the feelings of others. I'm not a fate.
No, you're not a fate, but as my daughter, you can become one.
His inhuman smile widened. She imagined he was trying to be reassuring, but there was nothing remotely comforting about a man who'd just told a captive woman he'd put her in a smaller cage and that he could make Scarlet a monster too.
Tell me, Autara, what can you do?
Scarlet swallowed thickly. She didn't want to answer him, but she knew this was a test, and she didn't want to find out what would happen if she failed. I've always seen my own emotions in colors, she admitted, but recently I've begun to see the feelings of other people as well.
Can you see any of my emotions?
He asked, voice still mild. Another test. And this time Scarlet didn't know what the correct answer was. She imagined most people wouldn't want her eavesdropping on their emotions. If the father who'd raised her had asked Scarlet this, then the correct answer would have certainly been no. But the fallen star was the fate who'd created all the other fates. He wouldn't want a daughter without talent. Scarlet took a calming breath. She never intentionally attempted to see another's emotions, and the fallen star was a fate, not a human. But apparently, she wasn't entirely human either. Scarlet stood a little straighter, shoving all her fear and worry and terror aside until she saw glimpses of colors that weren't her own. She'd expected angry reds and wicked purples, but the fallen star was made of magnificent golds. He was pleased and growing more delighted by the moment. She could see hints of eager green as he watched her use her powers to read him.
What do you see? He asked.
You're happy I'm here. Happier than you expected to be. And you're proud. I can see copper sparks of it all around you as I'm speaking.
Excellent.
He nodded once, and the eager greens around him deepened into a greedier shade.
I knew you'd be talented. There was another fate with a similar ability. He could control emotions, but the gift never worked on immortals.
I can only see emotions. I can't control them, Scarlet corrected.
That's because you haven't had my help.
The fallen star reached up to pet her head.
Scarlet couldn't help it. She cringed away. If he wanted to kidnap her or put her in a cage, she wasn't strong enough to stop him. But she would never accept affection from him. Maybe it wasn't the smartest way to survive, but not everything was about survival. The fallen star's hand fell away. But to her surprise, he gave her another inhuman smile.
If you'd accepted me too easily, I would have been disappointed. But you will not keep fighting me. You are my only child. When I ascend to the throne, I'll share the entire Meridian Empire with you, if you become what I want you to be.
He waved one massive hand, and Scarlet's horror spiked as sparks in the air exploded into flames that filled the space above their heads and twisted into shining shapes. She saw an image of herself sitting on a throne in a full party dress with a jeweled diadem atop her head and a line of suitors, some on their knees, others with their hands outstretched with elaborate gifts.
I can make all of your wildest dreams come true once you come into your powers. I can make you a fate like me.
Scarlet bit back from saying that taking over the Empire with him or becoming a fate was not one of her dreams, as he waved his hand again and the fiery image shifted. Scarlet was still sitting in the throne room, but she was now at the fallen star's feet. And instead of a diadem resting on her head, there was a cage around it.
I'll let you choose which future you want. Think about it while I'm gone. My lovely lady prisoner will keep you company and remind you of what will happen if you try to leave the menagerie.
He caressed the bars of the gilded cage, and Scarlet realized why this young woman looked so familiar. The lady prisoner was another fate. In Decks of Destiny, her card had a double meaning. Sometimes her picture promised love, but usually it meant sacrifice. Scarlet couldn't remember what the lady prisoner's powers were, but she hoped it wasn't some form of fortune-telling when the young woman's eyes shifted from purple to white, as she said,
I look forward to watching you transform into what he wants.
Chapter 27. Donatella. Tella hoped to find Legend when she finally succumbed to sleep. She didn't care if he was distant from her rejection or still a little dead. She just hoped he was there. Her shredded Skyfall blue skirts dragged over the floors of Idlewild Castle, picking up bits of abandoned glitter from discarded paper stars as she searched a ballroom that had no ball. She knew she was dreaming, but everything felt more like an abandoned memory. Unlike the first night of the last game of Caraval, when Dante had accompanied her here, the ballroom was silent, save for the drip-drop of a few pathetic party fountains. During the last Caraval, they had flowed with deep burgundy wine, but now they barely drizzled a rusty red liquid the color of broken hearts. Jack sauntered out of the cage in the center of it in an elegant blur of wrinkled and half-buttoned clothing. Golden hair hung over his eyes, and it shined brighter than anything in the room. He looked untamed and more beautiful than Tella wanted to admit. His movements were indolent, yet graceful, as he sliced off a wedge of a Skyfall blue apple, the same exact color as her dress. Her cheeks felt suddenly flushed as he put the slice of fruit in his mouth and took a wide bite.
What are you doing here? She demanded. Not having as much fun as I'd hoped.
He wandered closer. He smelled especially divine tonight. The scent of apples was paired with a rich spice she couldn't identify. She tried to tell herself she only liked it because, when she'd been awake, all she could smell was death. But the closer Jax drew, the more she fought the urge to inhale him. Something was very wrong with this dream.
That's not what I meant, she said in a huff. I only gave you permission to enter my dreams for one night.
And yet,
you didn't try to keep me out tonight. His perfect lips toyed with the sharp tip of his blade. What were you thinking before you slept? Not about you. Really, he taunted. You weren't wishing I was there to make you feel better. He continued toying with the knife, but the look in his unearthly eyes softened as his gaze trailed over her untamed curls and down to her ungloved hands, until it landed on the frayed hem of her wrecked ball gown. She almost thought he was concerned until he said, "You look miserable." "It's not polite to tell that to a girl," she snapped. "I didn't come here to be polite, my love." He dropped his knife to the floor with a clatter and stalked closer. "I'm here because you wanted me." "No, I didn't."
"So you don't want me to take your pain away?"
His eyes were the flawless blue of polished sea glass.
"I can make you feel whatever you want when you wake up. All you have to do is ask."
He cupped her cheek with his cool hand and leaned in closer.
She should have pulled away. The word obsession returned to her mind. But when Jax touched her, she couldn't bring herself to worry that this was a horrible idea, or hate the feel of him the way she was supposed to. His cool skin was soothing against her heated cheek, coaxing her to close her eyes, to lean into him, to take what he was offering.
"Doesn't that feel better?"
His cold lips were at her ear, brushing against the sensitive skin.
"Just say yes, and I'll take away everything that hurts. I can make you forget it all, and I can give you things that your dead princeling couldn't."
A shiver shot down Tella's spine, and her eyes flashed open. This wasn't what she wanted. Everything that hurt was everything she cared about. Legend, her mother, Scarlet, the Fates taking over the Empire. Tella shook her head and pulled away. She didn't need Jax to make her feel better. She needed to wake up. She needed to find her sister. And then she needed to go to the Vanished Market to purchase a secret that might tell her how to destroy the fallen star. She didn't need to erase her pain. She needed it to propel her into action. Just because it was a negative emotion didn't mean it wasn't a valuable one. "We're not doing this." Jax rocked back on his heels and ran his tongue over the tips of his teeth.
"You don't want to feel better?"
"No, and I don't want you." He laughed, tossing back his golden head and making the sound echo across the abandoned ballroom.
"You say that, my love, but a part of you does, or I wouldn't even be here."
Chapter 28. Scarlet. Scarlet pretended not to be terrified. She pretended she wasn't trapped inside the faded menagerie. She pretended that instead of petrified shades of plum, her feelings were peaceful hues of pink that matched the gauzy crescent bed she forced herself to lie on. She'd wanted to use the reverie key the moment the fallen star left, but the lady prisoner hadn't taken her lavender eyes off of Scarlet. Because of her cage, the Fate couldn't physically stop Scarlet from leaving, but Scarlet didn't want the lady prisoner yelling to alert a guard before she could escape. It would be safer to sneak out after the Fate fell asleep.
"Whatever you're planning, you can trust me with it."
The lady prisoner delicately hopped off her perch and walked to the edge of her cage, watching Scarlet between golden bars. Her smile was far more convincing than the fallen stars. But she was a Fate, and although she was imprisoned, she'd seemed pretty loyal to the fallen star before he'd left. Scarlet's other father, Marcello, had guards like this, younger guards, who he'd told to be friendly to his daughters for the purpose of keeping an extra close eye on them.
"I'm not planning anything," Scarlet said.
"Of course you are," said the Fate.
"Are you telling me this because of your power?" Scarlet still didn't trust the imprisoned Fate,
but she was curious about her. She could remember what her card represented, but she still couldn't recall her ability. When your eyes went white earlier, were you seeing the future?
I used to see the future, lovely, before I was in this cage. I was beloved for my gifts. People feared the other fates, but they adored me. And they knew they could trust me because I cannot lie. This cage has dimmed my gifts. I now only see small glimpses of things that will come to pass. Occasionally I receive inklings of which choices are best pursued or left unmade. But the only unfettered gift I still have is my inability to lie.
Scarlet watched the fate skeptically as she began to strum the bars of her cage. The bit about being unable to lie did sound familiar, but it didn't make Scarlet trust her.
You're still looking at me as if I'm your enemy, but I'm far more trapped than you. Do you know how horrible it is to be kept like a pet?
No, but Scarlet had a feeling that if she didn't leave soon, she'd find out.
Why did he put you in the cage?
It wasn't only him. It was another fate, the Apothic. He can move metals and stones with his mind. The Apothic formed the cage, and Gavriel sealed it with his fire to make it impenetrable to anyone except for him. He did the same thing to the Maiden Death, when he had the Apothic place a cage of pearls around her head. Like her, I won't be free until he's truly dead. Her violet eyes filled with sorrow, but Scarlet could see strands of violent purple swirling around her. She wasn't loyal to the Fallen Star, but that didn't mean she would be loyal to Scarlet. All that mattered to the lady prisoner was getting out of her cage.
Gavriel takes pleasure in passing out punishments. If you're smart, you'll listen to me. Once he takes the Meridian Empire's crown, it will be a dynasty of terror. The only reason he's not sitting on the throne right now is because he loves toying with humans, and he wants his subjects to adore him before they come to hate him.
He won't get away with it, Scarlet said. Legend was not her favorite, but he'd do everything in his power to keep his throne.
Oh, sweetheart, sighed the fate. He's already started to get away with it. While you were sleeping like a distressed damsel, Gavriel sent a few of his loyal fates to slay the next emperor.
What? Scarlet felt all the blood drain from her face. Legend couldn't be dead. Legend was immortal. Immortals weren't supposed to die. But Scarlet knew better than most that Legend could be killed. She'd seen his dead body during the first Caraval. He would come back to life eventually. But if he was really dead now, then what had happened to Julian and Tella? When Scarlet had left to find Nicholas, both Tella and Julian had been in the palace. Tella knew when to run, but Julian liked to fight. He was Legend's brother. He was a part of his games and now his court. And unlike Legend, Julian was mortal. If he died outside of Caraval, he wouldn't come back to life.
Scarlet's mouth went suddenly dry. She really had to get out of there and find Julian and her sister. I'm glad to see you're finally believing something I said. The murdered king and the undead queen are currently in charge. Your history books say they were our rulers, but they answer to Gavriel. He's given them orders to make everyone as miserable as possible until the entire city is terrified. That's when Gavriel will come in like a savior and make his claim for the throne. By then, people will be eager to believe whatever lies he tells. Unless you decide to stop him.
The lady prisoner gripped the bars of her cage as she peered across the room at Scarlet.
You must become what he wants most. Only you have the power to defeat him.
The fate's eyes flickered from lavender to milky white. Then her shoulders slumped. She released the bars, returned to her perch, closed her eyes, and went back to sleep, as if she'd not just told Scarlet the world was ending and it was her job to save it. but the only people Scarlet could think about saving just then were Tella and Julian. She needed to escape and make sure they were safe. She sat on the low bed, legs bouncing up and down, no longer able to pretend she wasn't terrified. Anissa appeared to be asleep, but Scarlet waited until her breathing sounded more like a series of gentle snores. Scarlet cautiously rose and took a step. The fate continued with her snores. Scarlet took another step. And another. And another. And then, without meaning to, she was running toward the main doors and shoving the reverie key inside the lock. Julian, Julian, Julian. Thinking Julian's name as she turned the key was the fastest decision she'd ever made. If he was alive, she needed... Her thought was cut short as she stepped through the door and found herself standing beneath a rickety wooden loft, staring at a sea of straw and hay, with one tired and beautiful boy in the center of it all. His jacket was gone, his shirt sleeves were rolled up, his pants were ripped, and her heart leaped into her throat the instant she saw him. Julian's amber eyes flared at the sight of her, and probably at the sight of her dress, which had transformed into a glittering ball gown with a full skirt covered in rubies. It was difficult to run in, but it didn't stop Scarlet from flinging forward and throwing her arms around him. He smelled like dirt and tears and perfection, and she decided then that she was never, ever letting go of him. She wished there was a way to tether her heart to his, so that even when they were apart, they would still be attached. There were things in this world to be truly afraid of, but loving Julian was not one of them. "I'm so glad you're alive. When I heard what happened to Legend, I was terrified that you'd been hurt as well." "I'm fine. I'm fine." Julian held her tighter, as if he never wanted to let go either. "I've just been worried about you. How did you get here?" "I used the key." Scarlet pulled away, just enough to see his eyes. "I had to find you." Before Julian could respond, she leaned back in and kissed him with everything she had. As soon as Scarlet's lips found his fingers knotted in her hair, and his tongue swept into her mouth, taking over every inch of it. He was usually sweet when he kissed, all worshipping lips and gently exploring hands, but there was nothing sweet about this kiss. It was desperate and devouring. A kiss with teeth and claws, as if they needed to hold on to each other with more than just their hands. The back of her dress vanished, and then Julian's hands were there, branding her bare skin. She knew there were other important things that probably needed to be discussed, but nothing felt more critical than this. If the last few days had proved anything, it was how painfully quick the world could tilt and shift. People died. People were taken. People turned out to be far different from how Scarlet imagined they'd be. But Scarlet knew who Julian was. He was flawed and imperfect, rash and impulsive. But he was also passionate and loyal and loving. And he was who she wanted. His hand was the hand that she wanted to hold. His voice was the sound she wanted to hear, and his smile wasn't just something she wanted to see. She wanted to be the reason for it. He'd never be perfect. He'd told her that, but she didn't want perfect. She only wanted him. Her hands went to the buttons of his shirt. "Hold on, Crimson." Julian gently grabbed at her wrists. "As much as I'm enjoying this, we need to pause." He carefully removed her hands from his shirt. There was a flash of red on his arm as he moved, where his bandage had been. It was gone now, and in its place, on the underside of his arm, was a tattooed star filled with a strong shade of red ink. Tears instantly prickled at the corners of her eyes. "It's Scarlet," she gasped. Julian gave her a timid smile. "It's actually Crimson."
But,
she stammered over what to say. He'd done this when they hadn't even been speaking, and he had no assurance they'd be together.
"I didn't want to wait,"
he said, easily reading her thoughts on her face.
"I knew that if I came back and things didn't work out, I'd regret losing you, but I'd never regret having a reminder of you."
I love you, Julian.
His smile could have saved the world.
Think the dead saints. I've been waiting to hear you say that.
His mouth crashed against hers, consuming her once again.
I should have told you sooner, she said, speaking the words in between kisses, unable to hold the rest back. I should have told you the minute we left Nicholas's estate, and I realized the game I'd made up was a mistake. I choose you, Julian, and I promise I will always choose you, and I will always love you. I will love you with every bone in my body, so that even after my heart stops beating, a part of me will remain to forever love you.
Julian kissed her again, sweeter this time, lips attentive and soft as he whispered words against her lips.
I've loved you since that night you showed up on the beach, back on Trista, thinking you could bribe me to run away without you. I could see how terrified you were when I showed up, but you didn't back down.
And then you kidnapped me. His grin turned wolfish.
That was your sister. But I have been trying to steal you ever since.
His hands kneaded her lower back as he pulled her close for another kiss. But Scarlet startled at a noise from above. Abruptly, she looked up to see Tella staring down from the hayloft. She looked as if she'd just woken up from a very unsatisfying sleep. Her hair was full of hay, her eyes were red, and her lips were turned down. Chapter 29 Scarlet Tella looked the way Scarlet felt right after she'd been taken by the fallen star. Exhausted and broken, and not entirely certain what to do next.
Scar?
Tella said, her voice rough from waking up. The uneven sound of her scrambling feet followed as she raced down the ladder from the loft. Before she reached the bottom rung, she jumped forward and tossed her arms around Scarlet.
I'm so glad you're all right.
Nothing is going to happen to me. Scarlet squeezed her sister back.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you where I was going. Meeting Nicholas was a mistake.
The barn fell silent. All Scarlet could hear was the crackle of hay beneath Tella and Julian as they exchanged troubled looks.
What happened?
Tella released her sister as Julian pulled at the back of his neck. What happened? Scarlet repeated.
Nicholas is dead, Tella said.
We think he was murdered by the fallen star. If Scarlet had been capable of feeling more emotion, her legs might have buckled, or she might have felt tears build behind her eyes for the man she'd once intended to marry. But for a heartbeat, the only colors she could see were black and white, as if her emotions were shutting off so that they didn't consume her. She'd never imagined her game would have ended this way.
How do you know it was the fallen star? Scarlet asked. Because of the way he was killed, Julian answered, looking down. He was burned.
Poor Nicholas. Scarlet hugged her arms to her chest, wishing she could go back in time, wishing she'd forgiven Julian sooner and never rekindled things with Nicholas. The fallen star had undoubtedly come here looking to find her, and Nicholas had paid the price.
How did you get away? Tella asked. Where have you been?
It was tempting to make up a lie. After finally confessing her feelings to Julian, Scarlet didn't want Julian to view her differently. And Tella looked so fragile already. Scarlet imagined a feather could have knocked her over. It might break her to learn the fate who killed their mother was Scarlet's birth father. But it was too dangerous of a secret to keep. Scarlet started with the least shocking information, by telling Tella about the reverie key she'd been given, and how she could use it to escape anywhere. Tella perked up with a bit of awe and a hint of jealousy, which was better than fragility and fear. But Scarlet doubted her sister would have the same response to this next revelation. Scarlet still wasn't sure how she felt about it.
but she knew she couldn't keep it to herself. She took a deep breath. It's a good thing I had the key because I didn't actually get away. I was abducted by the Fallen Star. Tella, you were right about why the Fallen Star came here. But he wasn't looking for both of us. Just me. He's my father. Scarlet half expected the ground to shake or the rickety roof to collapse at her words. Tella's face went bone white, but her expression turned fierce and her hand felt warm and solid as she took Scarlet's and squeezed tight. You're the same as you've always been. We just know more about you now, but it doesn't change you. Not unless you let it. And this news doesn't change us either. Even if we didn't share any blood at all, I would still call you my sister, and I would battle anyone who tried to say it wasn't true. You are my family, Scarlet. Who your birth father is doesn't change that. I don't see you differently either. Julian wrapped an arm around Scarlet, but when he spoke again, his voice was tentative. Does this make you a fate? No, Tella said immediately. The witch who helped the Fallen Star create the fates said that the fates were made, not born. And Scarlet could never be a fate. Fates can't love. If an immortal loves, it makes them human. And we both know how much Scarlet loves. Tella's right. I'm not a fate, Scarlet said. But when she tried to add a smile to her words, her voice wobbled as she thought about the Fallen Star's threat to turn her into one. She wasn't with him now, but her powers had been growing on their own. What if she was already on her way to becoming a fate? Julian's arm tightened around her. It's all right, Crimson. You're safe now. We won't let him find you. That's not what I'm worried about, Scarlet confessed. The Fallen Star said he wanted to cultivate my powers and turn me into a fate. Julian stiffened beside her. You don't have to worry. He doesn't have you anymore, Tella said. What if it happens without him? I've always seen my emotions in colors, but lately I've been seeing the feelings of other people as well. Like our feelings? Julian asked. Scarlet nodded. At first it was just glimpses, but I can feel the ability becoming more powerful. She cut off at the sound of a bark. Near and loud enough to draw everyone's attention to the mouth of the barn, where Nicholas's dog, Timber, barked again, more urgently this time. Chapter 30. Donatella. Tella loved dogs. Back on Trista, she'd even gone so far as to steal a puppy once. She'd cleverly named him Prince Tuckleberry the dog. But after her father found her, Tella had never seen Prince Tuckleberry again. She'd spent such a short time with the animal that Tella had a limited understanding of the way dogs communicated. But clearly Nicholas's pet was trying to tell them something. The massive black dog barked. Then he turned his great head toward the outside, as if he wanted the three of them to follow. Do you think he's telling us Nicholas is somehow still alive? Scarlet asked. No, Tella answered. But maybe someone else was. Like legend. The trio started toward the cracked barn doors and out into the late afternoon. Julian clutched Scarlet's hand, as if he never planned to let her out of his sight. Tella hoped he didn't. Now that Scarlet was back, Tella needed to go to the vanished market and do whatever it took to purchase a secret that would show her how to destroy the Fallen Star before he could get his horrible hands on her sister and turn her into a fate. Tella wanted to believe it wasn't even possible. But it should have been impossible that a fate was actually Scarlet's father, or that Scarlet now had the ability to see other people's feelings. Not that it changed anything. Tella meant what she'd said. Even if they didn't share a drop of blood, Scarlet would still be her sister. An early evening breeze cut through the air as Tella continued to follow Timber's lumbering steps to the back of the estate. She didn't feel the least bit rested.
She felt as worn as the slippers on her feet.
But her heart kicked out extra beats as Timber led them to a cobbled path so overgrown with purpling brambleberry bushes that she and Julian hadn't noticed it during their initial exploration of the grounds. The dog halted and barked until the trio worked to part the prickly plants. As soon as there was enough space to run through, the animal raced ahead. The air turned acrid as Tella followed. Her nose wrinkled at the scent of blood and sweat and embarrassment. Suddenly, she hoped Legend wasn't on the other side. The stench wasn't nearly as foul as Nicholas's house had been, but Tella felt a sense of building horror as an aged amphitheater came into view. She saw the steps first. Their stones were almost blue in the fading light, the color of cold hands and blue veins under skin. There weren't many of them. The theater was small, the sort built for family plays or bits of light entertainment. But there was nothing entertaining about the forced masquerade taking place on the center of the stage. The people were dressed in servants' clothes and wearing horrible half-masks that came in sour shades of plum, cherry, blueberry, lemon, and orange. The colors made Tella think of rotted confetti that refused to fall as the servants moved about the stage, their arms and legs strung up with rope that turned them into human marionettes. Tella cursed. Scarlet gasped. Julian looked as if the food he'd eaten in the barn had risen up to scald his throat. No one appeared to be pulling the servants' strings. The cords all moved by magic, bobbing them about the stage in a forced dance full of disturbing bows and curtsies. Tella's eyes latched onto the youngest forced participant, a boy with ringlets as pretty as a doll's and a face stained with dried tears.
No wonder we didn't find any servants, said Julian.
How long do you think they've been like this? Scarlet asked. No one knew how to answer her. If the servants had been strung up when the count had been killed, it must have been at least a full day. Most of them didn't even appear to be conscious. Their heads stayed bowed as their bodies were jerking about the stage.
Tella raced toward it, hoping it wasn't too late to save them.
This looks like Jester Mad. He has the ability to animate objects. He must have tied them all up and then used his magic on the ropes to keep them moving.
How do we undo it? Scarlet asked. When the poisoner petrified the family, he left a note.
But no one found a note on the stage.
I think we just need to cut the cords or untie them, said Julian,
which proved easier said than done. The poor servant's arms and limbs moved faster with each attempt to set them free. Julian was the only one with a blade. He gave it to Scarlet. But none of them had an easy time of things. They all had to jump back more than once to avoid being kicked in the stomach or punched in the face as they worked to undo the servant's bonds. Thankfully, Nicholas didn't employ too large of a staff. There were only half a dozen of them. Their hearts were still beating, but barely. None of them could stand on their own legs very long once they were freed.
The master has infection remedies for the wounds in his greenhouse, muttered an older man as he ripped a rotted blueberry mask from his face.
Tella imagined he was the butler. His eyes were the saddest of the lot, as he looked over his fellow servants all slumped across the stage. Julian found the remedies while Tella fetched water, and Scarlet procured bandages from a small closet for the servants' raw wrists and ankles. The entire ordeal was terribly somber. Neither Scarlet, Julian, nor Tella told any of the servants what had happened to Nicholas, and none of them asked, making Tella suspect that they must have already known, or they'd experienced enough terror and they didn't want to know. There were lots of murmured thanks, but no one met her eyes, as if they were ashamed of what had been done to them. Only the boy with the ringlets looked at Tella directly. He even managed a crooked smile, as if she were some sort of hero, which she wasn't. Not at all. She was part of the reason all of this had happened. But in that moment, she vowed that she would make up for the part she'd played in freeing the Fates. "I'll find who did this to you, and make sure he never hurts anyone again."
"He wore a mask," offered the boy. "But it wasn't like this."
The child kicked at the scrap of cherry fabric that had been tied to his face.
"He was shiny, like porcelain, and one side was baring teeth, while the other side winked and stuck out half a tongue."
"Jester Mad," said Tella. "He's a fate." Several of the adults suddenly looked her way as she spoke. At least one appeared to think she shouldn't be saying any of this to the little boy.